You are listening to Community Radio KGNU Boulder Denver, and it is time for another edition of our monthly radio book club. I'm Maeve Conran, and my co-host, as always, Arsene Kashkashian with the Boulder Bookstore, joining me in the studio. And a really interesting pick for this month's selection.
Well, you know, I like to mix it up. And we had some people in the store who really loved this book. And I really like books that are either novels in kind of pieces or are interconnected stories. This is something of both. I mean, we can get into that a little later. And I also thought it'd be a fascinating topic for our listeners. The book is 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl by Mona Awad. And in this book, you have somebody who's really struggling with body image her whole life, really from high school into maybe her early 30s, if I had to guess the age on this. And with the way Mona looks at it, I thought was really fascinating, not only from the girl's point of view, but she also has the husband's point of view in one of the chapters, kind of a musician, boyfriend, exploiter person in one of the chapters. But you understand that no matter what's going on in her life, this concern about her weight, the concern about her body image almost overrides everything else.
But we're delighted to have the author of 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl, Mona Awad, joining us in the studio. Good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
And just to let our listeners know, you're now based in Denver. You're doing a PhD in creative writing and English literature at the University of Denver.
Yes, that's right.
And so how did this book tie in with your studies? Was this something that you were kind of pursuing, or is it a subject matter you've wanted to do for a long time?
No, it's a subject matter that I've wanted to write about for quite a long time. It ended up being my thesis for my MFA at Brown. So when I went into Brown, I had about half of it done, and I finished it there. Yeah,
pretty good thesis. I mean, to get published by Penguin and have success, and that must feel great, and must have been a great experience for you to be able to find the publisher and get right out there in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was incredibly exciting and gratifying when it was done, although the book did take 6 years to write, so it was a labor of love.
It wasn't instant.
No, it was not instant.
And some of the chapters were published individually as short stories. Do you think of the book as being stories that are connected, or do you think of it as a whole novel at this point? And did you have to do more to connect the stories than what they appeared as in magazines, for instance?
No, that's a really good question. I mean, it's an interesting thing for me, because I think in the end it was both. Like, it works now for me as both, and that's the only way I would have it. When I first conceived of the idea, I did think of them as short stories, and I think that really worked for me, because I really wanted to look at how body image affects various like aspects of this character's relationships. And I thought that short stories were the best way to really do that, and really get into a moment of tension between the character and someone else, and how body image might be informing the dynamic between her and that other person. But I also wanted to show her journey over time, you know, this one character, and how body image kind of affects her over time as well. So in the end, I kind of made the short stories link up together to tell this one bigger narrative about one woman.
Mm-hmm. In the story starts, and she's in high school, and I think her name is Lizzie at that point. She's Elizabeth, and she uses every variant of that as she goes through different pieces of her life, different parts of her life, which is one of the more interesting things. Even later, she's telling her husband, "No, call me Beth or call me Elizabeth." Like, she's correcting her husband because she's decided that she wants to be somebody else at that moment. But there is some humor in it, because it's a tough subject, I felt like. And did you feel you needed to have some level of humor to kind of, or did that just kind of well up?
I don't know. I mean, I was very, very committed to kind of emotional honesty in this book. You know, body image is something that I've definitely struggled with, and a lot of people that I care about, I've seen them struggle with it too. And I feel like the truth, it has to be funny too. Like, there, you know, the truth is both light and dark. So the humor was really important to me, to capturing. It wouldn't have rung true, I think, if it had just been serious, you know.
I think what I found fascinating about this, because obviously Liz or Lizzie or Beth or Elizabeth, the same character, her relationships with different people change. I mean, her relationship certainly with herself, or her friend, the friend that we hear of, the high school friend, because she comes back in a little bit later, the relationship with her mother, ultimately her husband. But her relationship with food never seems to change, and it's incredibly dysfunctional. And so you said this was this topic you wanted to write about. You've had your own body image, you know, what is your relationship with food? Why was that something that you really wanted to get into?
Well, like I said, I mean, it is something that I think, you know, I've struggled with. It's kind of, you know, something that women in my family have struggled with. But it's also something that, honestly, I mean, and perhaps I'm hyper aware of it because I have, you know, a family of women who have dealt with this. But I think it consumes a lot of people. I mean, it feels like it's the subtext in a lot of conversations that I hear between women, you know, in dressing rooms, for example, you know, in restaurants, at bars, even just, you know, chatting with my friends. And I was like, wow, we are very consumed by this, aren't we? Even on like a subconscious level, it always seems to be present. And so I just wanted to look at all the ways in which that subtext is kind of just there every day in our lives and informing how we see ourselves, how we see each other, how, you know, how we even see the world, how we are in the world.
It really is such a dichotomy or such a contradiction, because we have like almost a pornographic relationship with food. I mean, certainly with social media, everyone wants to snap a photo of their dinner and then post it on social media. And, you know, I mean, I do liken it to pornography in many ways, our relationship. Mm-hmm. And yet then there's the guilt. There's the shame that comes with this, because at the same culture that we live in also tells us that we're too fat or we need to be skinnier, while at the same time you need to be eating these foods. And so there's these constant mixed messages happening and being, you know, sent out all the time. And we don't seem to have the tools to navigate any of that.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I would agree with you. And I think my character is definitely a product of that kind of culture and gets, you know, confused. And, you know, once she's lost weight, I mean, she's still kind of seeing herself in that same paradigm of, like, you know, somebody who's still dealing with these body image issues, somebody who still sees themselves as overweight. And, you know, she's still consuming, like she's consuming dresses instead, you know, and becomes fixated with that and is still very hyper aware of food. You know, that never goes away. So.
There was one scene with a co-worker who they have this very, I don't think, dysfunctional relationship again. Right. They go out and have these lunches together. And I think the co-worker, it seems certainly, whether or not it's overtly described as such in the book, as she seems to be slim. Mm-hmm. And yet she just loves food. She's a sensual relationship. And she almost has this sexual experience when she's eating a pineapple cake.
Well, she has that yum, 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 or whatever. I can't remember how you put it in the book. But she has these words she uses. Yeah.
Right.
And the pineapple cake. And meanwhile, Elizabeth will go to these lunches with her, but won't eat anything, really.
Right.
You know, and yeah, it was painful. You know, as a guy, you know, I'm not privy so much to this world. Like, obviously, I understand that women have issues, and there's been some women in my family who've had issues around these things. But it's really eye-opening to the level of that, how pervasive it was through all parts of her life.
Right.
And how even when she supposedly, you know, lost weight and maybe she's in a place where most people wouldn't say, oh, that's a fat girl, but it never changes for her. And also how pervasive it is in her mother's attitude towards her. Maybe you could talk about that mother's relationship.
Sure.
Because there's a great chapter or story in here where what I can't remember the exact title, but what my mother thinks is sexy or something.
My mother's idea of sexy.
My mother's idea of sexy, where she basically dresses her in something like a prostitute to show her coworkers, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think that relationship, the mother-daughter relationship and how body image can inform it was, I thought, really important to a book about a woman who is dealing with these kinds of issues. And, you know, it was very, very difficult to portray it and get the right note, you know, because I think there were a lot of things going on between them. You know, there's love, there's concern, there's jealousy, you know, there's the desire to live vicariously, because obviously, you know, the mother is dealing with her own issues, her own health issues and her own weight issues. And so to get all of those things kind of like right, it took a long time, but I thought it was a really, really important thread to understanding why somebody would have such a pervasive, you know, kind of struggle with her body. Yeah.
The other thing that's fascinating too is Well, that, in that story, you get her mother's relationship to the clothes. Like, oh, my daughter is slim now, and I'm going to dress her in these most outrageous, sexy clothes.
Right.
But you always have her relationship to clothes. And you have, right. like, three short pieces, I think, in here where she's in the dressing room trying on clothes. And I think in a minute we can have you read a piece of one of those.
Sure.
But the dressing room is a kind of a scary place. And the people who come in and are going to try to fit you or and tell you, does that look good or not? And so that was certainly eye-opening as a guy. Because, you know, men's dressing rooms, we just put on something, we look in the mirror, we come out, you know, like for the most part. I mean, unless you're getting a suit and then you get a tailor to kind of really change it for you.
Yeah, there's almost an abusive relationship with, I think, one of the closed door ladies is Trixie, or there's another lady, because there's this weird dynamic between Liz or Lizzie or Beth or Elizabeth, whoever, which identity she has at that moment in the changing room, and then the clerk in the store bringing her stuff and say, oh, you look great in that, and she knows she doesn't. And I mean, there's this very strange, you know, dynamic going on between them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the fitting room is an interesting place. I mean, I think if you really break it down, it's fraught, you know. You're going into a public / private little, like, kind of, you know, small enclosure with bright lights and a big mirror, and, you know, with a piece of clothing that may or may not fit, and you're overhearing other women talk about their own bodies, and you're looking at your body, you know, under bright lights. I think it can be you know, tension-filled and anxiety-producing for a woman, regardless of how she might feel about her body before she enters that room and looks in the mirror. So I really wanted to kind of chart moment to moment what that experience would be like for somebody who does have those kinds of issues already, and so how much more heightened it would be in that confined but still public space, you know.
So I was wondering if you could read a little bit so people can hear your voice and also the tone of the book. And so you're going to read part of the story, the Von Furstenberg and I.
Yes.
And you're going to read from the beginning, so you probably don't need to set up too much then.
No, no. It's kind of like a separate little chapter. Okay, the Von Furstenberg and I. Despite my better judgment, I'm in the fitting room wrestling with the Von Furstenberg again. I've thrown it over my head, and I'm attempting to wedge my arms through the armholes, even though it's got my shoulders and ribcage in a vice grip. The fabric stretched tight over my face so I can't see, and it's blocking my air supply, but I'm doing my best to breathe through twill. This is the moment of deepest despair. This is the moment she always chooses to knock on the door. I can hear the slow, approaching clicks of her heels. Three light raps on the door with her opal-encrusted knuckles. I brace myself for the sound of her voice, all of my nerve endings like cats ready to pounce. When she speaks, I hear her disdain, bright as a bell. How are we doing in here? We. She means me and the Von Furstenberg. The Von Furstenberg and I. She saw me out of the corner of her exquisitely lined eye, going to the back of the store to retrieve it, between the frigid Eileen Fishers and the smug Max's Rias, and she disapproves. She knows the Von Furstenberg is a separate entity, that it and I will never be one. Fine, I say. I remain absolutely still. Try not to sound breathless, like all is well, just a regular shopping trip. Oh, good, she says. You let me know if you need anything. But in her voice I hear, give it up, fat girl.
That's Mona Awad reading from her new book, 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl, and that is the selected title for this month's Radio Book Club, a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU, Arsene Kashkashian with the Boulder Bookstore, as always, my co-host. And, you know, even the title fat, even the use of the word fat is so taboo nowadays. It's
absolutely.
Like we can't talk about weight. We don't use that term fat.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a concern of yours, or was that a deliberate choice of yours to use that word fat, not just in the title, but throughout the entire book?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, absolutely from the very, very beginning, I knew I wanted it in the title. And precisely because it is such a charged word, it is such a provocative word, you know, it is a word that is kind of a branding. And I wanted to kind of unpack it. I wanted to subvert it and complicate it by looking very closely at this woman who believes that she is that, you know, and kind of show how, you know, fat is a very dynamic kind of state, and it is a perspective, you know. It doesn't really have to necessarily do with flesh, just flesh. It's also a psychological place, a very damaging one.
Did you get any pushback from a publisher or an editor at all about the use of that word?
No, I was very fortunate. I think my my publisher was, and my editor was very supportive from the start and understood what I wanted to do with that word and with this book. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because she always refers to herself as fat, even though most of the other characters do not. Mm-hmm. And so for a while you're wondering how much is in her head? Like
right.
How much is she maybe just slightly overweight and it's
yeah,
in her head? And
exactly.
How much is, so I thought that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. The other thing I thought was interesting, too, is the two chapters where you step out of her point of view.
Yeah.
You have the musician who, this is when she's in high school, late high school, I believe, and living
right.
in her mother's house.
Mm-hmm.
And this musician who gets turned down by his girlfriend, basically, goes to see her and, you know, for a booty call, sort of. And she's baking all these gifts, things for him, and he can play all his songs for her, no matter how drunk he plays her, and he
right.
has all these compliments for her.
Yeah.
But there's a twist in that story that
mm-hmm.
shows some strength, and I
yeah.
thought maybe you could talk about why you chose to tell that from the musician's point of view, and maybe how Lizzie, at that point, there is some strength to her, and how that story ends, I think.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, you know, I mean, she's, I guess I did want to kind of complicate the kind of victim position that sometimes a person who sees themselves the way Lizzie sees herself might feel. She is also kind of, in some way, she has some power because that man is dependent on her as well. I mean, they're both depending on each other. They're both getting something from that relationship. And I wanted to show how she might kind of exploit that. She might kind of exploit his own vulnerability just as he's kind of exploiting hers, and how humans do that to each other, you know? So it was very important to me also to just step outside her skin a couple of times and give that outside perspective, because she is kind of suffering from a body dysmorphia. And I thought that it would be interesting at two different points in the book to kind of step outside and see how she might be observed from another perspective.
The husband, the story later on with the husband, Tom's point of view,
right.
I thought was probably the most heartbreaking story or
yeah.
heartbreaking chapter.
Uh-huh.
You know, he fell in love with her when she was heavy.
Right.
And then she's been losing the whole relationship.
Right.
And her at that point, I think her body image and what she thinks of herself and what the truth is maybe about her, I shouldn't use the word truth, but how others see her might be the furthest apart at that point.
Yes.
And
yeah.
and that relationship really becomes a victim to it. And
yeah.
that seemed pretty tough, I think, that Tom was willing to accept her as
mm-hmm.
she had been, wanted to accept her, was attracted to her very much so, it seems like.
Right.
But she couldn't accept that.
Yeah, I think it was really, I think Tom is a really sympathetic character in some ways, because he really does kind of see past all of this, but she doesn't. And I think what's important with Tom, I think, and with all of the characters in this book is, you know, Lizzie's body image issues aren't tied to any one gaze. You know, they're kind of like beyond all of that. They're also inside her, you know, just as much as it's external, it's also internal. That's something that I really wanted to explore with the book. Where does our idea that we're fat come from? Does it come from inside us, or does it come from outside us, or is it some space in between? And I think, you know, the truth is it's somewhere in between. And I think that, you know, the story with Tom really, really shows that it kind of goes beyond him. It goes beyond anybody.
It also really shows that your body image, it goes way beyond what your actual body's
yes,
like.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Lizzie or Beth or Elizabeth seems the most emotionally dysfunctional almost when she's at her slimmest, and when
mm-hmm.
she's lost all the weight. That's when she's binging on buying dresses and she's
right.
lost this. It seemed like a really nice relationship with her husband,
mm-hmm.
and yet that kind of corresponds with when she's slim, which was the body idea that she had wanted.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, I think that that's something else I really wanted to kind of question and challenge with this book, this notion that physical transformation equals happiness. And I think that's a popular narrative, a popular trajectory for, the weight loss journey. And I have trouble with that. I really have trouble with that idea. I think it's more complicated than that. I think that, you know, going through that kind of transformation takes its toll, and there's a cost. And I think that you have to deal with that cost for a while. And certainly my main character does.
And we've almost fetishized that journey in pop culture. There are so many television shows about losing weight. And it's all about the physical transformation and very little about what happens to you emotionally when you get to that point. Are you suddenly perfect? Are you suddenly happy? No more problems? And there's very little follow-up. I know there has been some news stories about, you know, The Biggest Loser, whatever that TV show is.
Yeah.
Afterwards, what has happened to the people who've lost all that weight? And very often, you know, the weight has maybe come back on, but it's not a problem solver. It's not the be-all and end-all, the physical transformation.
Right. I mean, that was a big, big question I wanted to ask. When we change our bodies, can we actually change ourselves, you know? And I, you know, obviously I don't necessarily think that we can, or I think that that's a more difficult journey than we like to think.
Well, you have a wonderful counterpoint to this in the book. The woman who does her nails towards the end, she's skinny at this point, or thin or whatever.
Right.
And the woman who does her nails is heavy set. And she almost gloats that this woman is so heavy set. But the woman is newly married. Mm-hmm. She says she's in the honeymoon phase of her relationship. Mm-hmm. And then at one time, she describes this wonderful birthday that her and her husband had.
Right, right.
And this woman seems very happy.
Yes.
And so Beth, or Elizabeth at this point in time, decides that she will try to recreate this with her husband.
Warped, dark
but
version.
It doesn't quite work, does it?
No, it doesn't. I think that character is really important. You know, a woman who is, you know, considered by Lizzie, at least, to be, you know, very overweight, but she is content. She's content in her own skin. She appears to be content in her relationship, and Lizzie can't understand that, but she wants it, you know? And I think that's why she develops kind of an obsession with that woman, is because she wants that happiness for herself. She wants that self-contentment.
Right. And, you know? And what you see so clearly there is that the biggest thing in the way of that is herself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, you know, what I thought was very true about the book is usually what people struggle with is within themselves. Mm-hmm. It's almost like people who think, if I just get this job, if I just get this, if I just made $10,000 more a year, I'd be happy. It never really works out like that. And, and you know, maybe, and weight is such an interesting thing, and the way people in our society, kind of like you were talking about with the food, like food porn, you know, people kind of binge because, you know, maybe they do sometimes even get heavy because there is an internal emotional problem. And if you just deal with the weight or the money or something, you're not really fixing, you know, or not really dealing with what's at heart here.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
And one of the characters that's not really present in the book, but certainly mentioned, is her father, who's largely absent. But he seems to think that being overweight is a choice, and not certainly getting into any of the nuance that we're talking about, and certainly not getting into any of the health or the actual biological issues around weight gain. It just seems to be, you've made that choice to be big.
Yeah, I know, it's true. And that's, I mean, I think that's a perspective that I think I felt like I had to bring into the book and kind of show how it would be received by somebody who is dealing with those kinds of issues. Because it's, I mean, there's some real frustration and helplessness when you come up against that kind of perspective. Like, oh, well, it's just, come on, you know, get with it. Just lose it. You
know? I thought one of the most beautiful passages in the book was when she's talking about her father, and she says there's a photo of her and her father when she's very young, right before he left, and he's smiling at her, and she says, he's gazing down at me with such love and incomprehension, the one taken before he left, before I grew up heavy like my mother. It might have been the last time I looked right into a lens and smiled with no reservations, with no shame. So kind of, what impact does the father leaving have? You have this mother we've seen pretty detailed, but just that one line gives you also a good insight into what she's struggling with.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Who is looking at her and who isn't? You know, I think that's really, really important to the book. That's why I called it 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl, because I think being highly visible creates some kind of damage, but also being invisible creates just as much, you know, and what's causing kind of the problem.
We've talked about how there are so many relationships in this, one of them being relationship with food,
right.
The relationship that Elizabeth or Lizzie or Beth has with herself, but also, you know, the various other relationships, the mother, the father, and her friendships as well. There's so much that's about female friendships that's in this book, and how much of that is around food and body image and all of that. That's in many ways, I mean, I personally just adore my female friends, and I've had friends since I was, you know, a baby that we're still friends with. And yet there's a lot of dysfunction that can come along sometimes with female friendships in these realms of food and body image and all of that.
Yeah, I thought it was very important in a book that takes on body image to look closely at female friendship. I mean, I find female friendship absolutely fascinating. And I mean, like you, I have a lot of close friends, of course, and that I cherish. But I also think female, I mean, we're just humans, you know, and I mean, there's always subtexts, you know, that are sometimes damaging, you know, and I think body image, because women are just so, you know, deeply impacted, I think, by body image. Body image is a subtext between friends, and it can create tension. It can create, you know, sometimes barbed aspects of the relationship. And I really wanted to examine those and see how they kind of feed, you know, negative self-image. And I think in Lizzie's case, certainly it does.
What reaction are you getting from readers? I know you've been out speaking and in the media. I mean, what are you hearing back, particularly from women who maybe are in the same position as Elizabeth with either body dysmorphia issues or weight issues?
I did a tour in the US and in Canada. You know, I had a lot of, actually what was so striking to me about it is when I would go on you know, to bookstores and do talks, women of various sizes, really, really running the gamut here, and various ages would tell me how much they related to a lot of these different things. And, you know, I kept Lizzie's actual physical weight out of the book. And that was a very, very, very deliberate choice on my part, because I really do think that body image is psychological. It's not necessarily physical. So I think that created room for a lot of readers to put themselves in Lizzie's position. And so I'm very happy about that. Probably the most moving moment I had was in Providence. I had a woman who came up to me after my reading and said that she was 71 and she still felt like a fat girl, and she was not overweight at all, but it was really very moving.
Well, I've seen that with some of my female friends, and I'm sure you guys have many more female friends than I do, where I had a friend who was upset because she either a dressing room scene, she was upset she couldn't wear a size 0 dress. She was a size 1.
Right.
And that really bummed her out. And she was a very petite, very beautiful woman. And, you know, so, you know, you can be upset that you're 105 instead of 100, you know, and that's why I thought it was really good that you didn't put the weight in, that it could be all inclusive for anybody who has these feelings, that it couldn't be dismissed as like, oh, she's 200, you know, that's way off the scale or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought that was really good in the book. And I thought it made me be able to relate it to some people that I've had where I just was looking at them like, well, the size 1 looks beautiful, too. What's the matter?
It's true. It really is so relative. And I think that's another reason why the dressing room narratives were so important to me, and why I kept wanting to revisit them, is because I think, you do overhear women's anxieties about their bodies. And sometimes they're talking about, you know, not being able to fit into an extra small or not. And you're just thinking, what? What's the problem? But you're not in that body. You don't know what it feels like to be in that body. And it's, it really is very relative, I think.
Did you talk to other women or men? Because weight, obviously, and body image isn't just, you know, the realm of women, although primarily it seems to be. Because you said that you've had your own body image issues, people in your family, women in your family. But did you talk to anybody else to get kind of other perspectives on this?
I think I just, you know, as I said, I think, you know, the fact that I've kind of been a little bit more, maybe more aware. I don't know how much more aware, honestly. I mean, maybe not more aware. But I just pay attention, I guess, to the way women talk about their bodies, and men too. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think this is an issue that really kind of transcends gender. You know, I think I don't know anybody who's been 100% comfortable in their own skin 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. I think an anxiety of being in your own skin is a universal feeling. And I think that being in culture, being, you know, having to go shopping for clothes, having to be out in the world, forces you to reckon with yourself and your physicality in ways that can sometimes create psychological damage.
And it does seem like, I mentioned this at the beginning, around social media adding so many extra layers. I mean, we're in the era of the selfie. It's like you seem to just be constantly posting some type of image of yourself out for the entire world to see and judge and comment on.
To me, it's just it's a remarkable thing. I mean, because I didn't really grow up in an era where that was really being done all the time, and I kind of marvel at it. But I also think, you're so visible. How can you bear it? But that's probably just being a teenager in the 90s.
Well, that's Mona Awad, who is the author of 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl. That was our selection for this month in the Radio Book Club. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Well, looking ahead to our next selection, we're going to have author Kevin Wolfe join us on Thursday, January 26th. His new book is Home Place. And Arsene, why have you selected this? Give our listeners a taste of what they can expect.
Well, you know, we like to do, books in pairs, it seems like. And we haven't been able to, we did a book by Gregory Hill, which was a mystery set in Colorado involving a pro basketball player. And I thought we haven't been able to pair that up yet. And so here we have, with Kevin Wolfe, unbelievably, a mystery set in Colorado involving a pro basketball player.
Awesome.
But it's been getting great reviews, and I'm looking forward to diving into it with him. This takes place in contemporary time now, rather than the Gregory Hill book took place in the 70s. And so I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
And Kevin Wolfe will join us to talk about Home Place on Thursday, January 26th. But in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Look for The Book Club. And after hours at The Book Club, because we're going to hear more from Mona Awad, author of 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl. And you can hear the Radio Book Club every month here at KGNU. It's a collaboration with the radio station and the Boulder Bookstore. As always, Arsene Kashkashian, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You are listening to Community Radio, KGNU.